clarify, not including section two at all.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Bowden.
It's true that by deleting section two, you take out the more offensive part, but then you're still back to the situation where you've got one governmental agency buying a machine larger than their own needs. In order to subsidize that, they have to compete with local or with private industry by contracting with other agencies, and I think that's unfortunate and not a good policy.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
I tend to look at this from a little bit different angle than Senator Bunn, in that governments are facing a situation where they don't have any money, and if they can access a state printer in a competitive bid process that allows them to get their work done cheaper, then we should be supportive of that. And so if there is a way to fix this amendment so that what we're talking about is government agencies contracting amongst themselves to provide the printing they need at the cheapest rate, then I think that I am supportive of that, and I'd like to see that happen.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Bowden.
I think we have no shortage of printers in the state. There are plenty of people to bid on competitive jobs, and I think the state going out and buying a huge press and then using that, in essence, to put people out of work is not something we need to be doing.
Mr. Chair, I may have missed it, but do we have testimony from the state printer that they would go out and buy a larger press so that they could?
They have a larger press.
But that they would buy a larger press as a result of this legislation so that they could increase their business with other agencies of government?
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
The state bought a web press, which allows them now to compete with private industry. They have the press. They obviously couldn't know that this would become law before buying the press. They may have believed or hoped it would, but that was not dealt with in testimony.
But the point is that they own the press now, and we're paying for it now, so we might as well use it as much as we can and save local governments money in the process, seems to me.
This is a long-standing argument, and I've been involved in it, not on this particular issue before, but this committee has dealt with legislation where I remember a sporting goods owner in Coos Bay wanted a differential on his bid over other bids submitted by other vendors. And the issue was, here I'm paying the taxes to support the school and do all these and contributing to the school, and then you let a bid to someone else outside of our immediate area. And he won the 5% tax. We had that in local government in the House. It's a problem.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to have to move on. It's already quarter to five, and we have five more bills.
Quarter to four.
Thank you.
Next bill is 3533, which we had not dealt with before. I think we dealt with it, but we never had the votes to pass. Is there anything, a motion now on 3533?
Oh, Mr. Chair, I was ready to move it to the floor before.
Okay.
I would move. Are there the right four people here, Mr. Chair? I would move House Bill 3533 to the floor of the Senate with a due pass.
Senator Cease moves House Bill 3533 to the floor with a due pass. Motion.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Smith.
In the interest of brevity, I'll keep my comments brief. I am very concerned about legislation that cuts out the public in the budget process, and that's exactly what this bill does, so I'll be voting against it.
Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Bunn.
I'll also be brief. I'm going to support it, but if we find abuses, I'm also going to support repealing it 2 years from now. That is, if I'm here to.
Any other vote explanations before we take the roll? Take the roll, call the roll, please.
Mr. Chair?
You got one?
No explanation, but I'm trying to review it just real briefly. Can you give me just a minute? From what I just heard, my vote may make a difference on this. Okay, thanks for waiting.
Call the roll, please.
Senator Bunn?
Aye.
Senator Cease?
Aye.
Senator Grinsky?
Aye.
Senator Kitzhaber? Senator Smith?
No.
Senator Springer? Mr. Chair?
Aye. Motion carried. Who would like to carry this bill?
Mr. Chair, I think you would make a beautiful bill carry for this bill.
By unanimous, I will carry it.
Oh, you're wonderful, Mr. Chair.
I hope it occurs after 5 o'clock.
Or early
session morning. After 5. They don't get any questions or very little discussion. Okay. House Bill 2045.
No.
2688.
Oh, House Bill 2688.
Mr. Chair, this is the bill that we heard on Wednesday that to which amendments had not yet been prepared. We now have those amendments. The proponents of the bill are prepared to come forward and explain those amendments to the committee.
Let them come forward. Don't waste our time, John. We're in a hurry. Move faster.
Do we need the opponents as well, Mr. Chair?
That's what I was asking for. The joint committee, if you will. For the record, my name is John Gervais, representing the National Electrical Contractors Association. Alone, I guess. It's quiet up here.
Especially when they're looking at your back.
Yes. May I leave? If you will, on the Dash 6 amendments, we would like to just point out the changes in the public policy portion of the bill. We have worked with cities and counties and school districts and state agencies and have put together, we hope, and we feel, a very fair and balanced piece that meets the needs of the prompt pay concept, yet provides fairness to the local agencies. The first statement is in Section 1, Sub 1, which talks about a policy. The third, actually in Section 2, there is a change in the language on line 17 to make certain that the interest does not start until 30 days after the payment invoices or the invoice request is received. In Section 3 on page 1, line 20, it calls for interest to be paid automatically when it's due, and that those interest payments will be forward along with the payment for the due on net.
Are we on the Dash 6 amendment?
We're on the
Dash 6 amendments, yes.
What page?
I'm on page 1, Section 3, line 20. The basic concept, I'm sorry, sir. Sub 3, yes. The basic concept there is that the automatic payment of interest, which the state of Oregon does now. In section or sub 4, we talk about, and this is the paper trail concern that we have, and with invoices sitting on tables for weeks at a time, we talk about a local government having 15 days to review an invoice that they've received and to make a determination if the invoice is defective. And then, when they notify the contractor has 7 days to make repairs on the project if it's a defective product, or to correct the invoice if it's an incorrect invoice, and that will keep the payment process in line. And then on page 2 also, in sub 5, we have the concept of interest payments if they are not, if they're refused to the contractor and are due, they will be, there will be legal fees to the prevailing party in an administrative and judicial situation, legal fees and costs. In section 6, sub 6 of this, we return to the present law on retainage. We simply asked on the 50% and the 97.5% that the local government, if it's a contracting agency or the state or whomever, when a request has been made for the reduction in retainage, that they make a written response. It does not change the requirement for the payment. Section 2 is from the original bill and talks about the concepts of taking fairness, and this is important to the National Electrical Contractors Association in that it takes the same requirements and passes them on down from the general to the subcontractor. But it creates a section for a good faith dispute and talks about on page 5 some of those kinds of concepts, and 10 days to pass down the money once the general has received the money from the contracting agency. They have 10 days then to pass it on to the subcontractor. That is an overview of the bill. We certainly appreciate the efforts of various governmental agencies to work with us. There are, Tricia has some small points that she would like to make that have come to attention, and she, of course, when we had the hearing on Wednesday, reserved the right to take their legal counsel, and we've agreed with the request that they've made.
Good afternoon, Chairman Otto, members of the committee. My name is Leticia Maldonado, representing Portland Public Schools. I have spoken with my legal counsel, and he has requested 3 changes, and those are on page 2, line 3, incorporating in the line, there is any defect or impropriety in any submitted invoice, or when there is a good faith dispute, we would like to have that included. And on line 5, in order to have some consistency, that would have to read, the reason or reasons the invoice is defective or improper, or the reasons for the dispute. Down on line 9, after his review, we would like to have deleted, payment of interest may be postponed when payment, have the section of interest. So it would read, payment of interest may be postponed when payment on the principal is delayed because of disagreement. I have made a copy of that page with the changes.
That's the feeling of the committee.
Oh,
Mr. Chair.
I'm drenched.
Fine. I'd move the amendments.
The amendments to the amendments?
Actually, I would move the amendments as further amended.
As further amended?
By the
good, thank you.
And engrossed information.
You move them in with the original.
That's correct. Yes. Yes, I would move the dash 6 amendments as further amended by the changes on page 2 that were passed out.
You heard the motion from Senator Bunn. Is there any objection to the motion?
Mr. Chair, could I ask John a question?
Yes.
John, do you object to these amendments?
No, we do not. Okay. We think they're positive changes.
Well, they looked okay, but I hadn't heard, so
yeah.
That's fine.
Uh-huh.
Okay. No objections to the amendments, the dash 6 amendments as amended?
Mr. Chair?
Could I ask you?
Yes, go ahead.
I'd move the bill with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Bunn moves. Moves House Bill 2688 as amended, floor with a due pass recommendations. is under seat.
Could I ask a question? Can someone who does legal things tell me about all of the new language in Section 2, and is this kind of language standard references that are understood by people who deal with these kinds of labor?
Mr. Chair, if I may start the response, I think Kamingo can...
kinds of contract issues.
For the record, John Gervais from the National Electrical Contractors Association, we took the federal language that's in present federal law and applied that, made some modifications that we thought fit Oregon better, but I think Kim could respond to the more legalistic questions.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Kim Mingo, and I represent the Associated General Contractors. Chairman Otto, Senator Cease, I'm not sure which part of Section 2 you are questioning.
Well, I don't know, Mr. Chair. I commented to somebody that it was almost looking like too much government, even for me, and they said that would never be the case. But in fact, it was Jack Kalinowski who told me that. But I just want to make sure that adding a lot of new language like this, that there's clear, case law, that there's nothing that's a new twist on any language, that there's case law that relates to different kinds of words and definitions that are in all of this reference. Actually, Mr. Chair, never mind. I'll vote for it anyhow, but I don't really like that much new language, especially not if it's federal.
Mr. Chair?
Pardon?
I'll offer a little bit of something. I can tell you that in private contracts, this language is fairly typical. I can't comment on the federal aspect of it, but I have been involved in construction contracts, and this is typically how you resolve these types of disputes.
Okay, well, that makes me feel a little bit better.
It makes you feel any better.
Thank you.
Call the roll, please.
Senator Bunn?
Aye.
Senator Cease?
Aye.
Senator Grinsky?
Aye.
Senator Kitzhaber? Senator Smith?
Aye.
Senator Springer? Mr. Chair.
Aye. Motion carried. And would you like to carry it, Senator Grinsky?
Sure. Be happy to.
If I might make just one quick comment, Senator Otto, Chair Otto, I would like to thank the committee for their patience in dealing with this, and AGC for their work with us, and the local governments were extremely helpful and cooperative.
Good. I would like to thank all of them, too. I think that's one way that we can settle disputes, getting all the people together and working on a project. Okay, for a hearing, we have House Bill 2045. We have one witness who is Dave White. Dave?
Mr. Chairman, for the record, I'm Dave White, the administrator of the Risk Management Division and Department of General Services. I note this is not the right hour or day to have your car manufactured, so. But nevertheless, Senate Bill 2045, Mr. Chairman, is one that really just does a lot of updating of the chapter which deals with the state's self-insurance and insurance internally. This chapter is has some parts of it that are 40-plus years old, and those parts deal in great detail with property issues, the restoration of state property. For example, there are two paragraphs that tell agencies what they need to tell us about their boats. There isn't even one paragraph that says anything about what they need to tell us about tort liability or workers' compensation, which are by far the bigger issues that we deal with. So it's really just an updating of the chapter generally. The parts that are removed that deal in great detail with what agencies should tell us are replaced with something that just says that agencies should tell us what we ask of them so that we can ask them the issues that are needed with regard to their personnel, budget, and activities as we require for risk, for insurance, and for claims purposes. The other issues is there, the statute as it exists has a list of certain perils that we'll insure ourselves for. It is more prudent to insure state property if we're self-insuring for all the perils that are out there, and that's the approach that we've used for some years. The law allows that, but it still has a lot of just cumbersome wording that agencies kind of have to plow through to see if we're really doing what we ought to be doing for them. It has some redundancy in other areas with regard to wording, and these are really essentially housekeeping changes. I know you don't like to hear that, it's so often not true. There is one substantive issue, too, and that is that it moves the Inmate Injury Fund, a workers' compensation type program for inmates that are working for pay, over to us in risk management from the Department of Justice. It makes no changes in that fund before it transfers. I would welcome any questions, although first I might mention that this bill was reviewed by the Joint Ways and Means and approved there and is in the crafted into the appropriate budgets, and therefore it may be appropriate for this committee not to refer it on to Ways and Means, as I think it's currently scheduled to do. It would be...
You say it's been referred there, or it's been in Ways and Means?
It has, Mr. Chairman.
And then you send it to us?
It went from Ways and Means to the floor of the House, then over to the Senate to here. As I see it, it's assigned to go back to Ways and Means, and I'm not sure why. There's been no change.
There's been no changes in the House.
That's right.
Did your budget pass out?
It did.
So they wouldn't do anything?
Right.
Any questions? Anyone else in the audience who would like to... Any comments? Hearing none, I close the hearing. If we can get another member in here, we'll have a work session.
Bad, Mr. Chair, that we tabled that 2688 bill.
Yeah, I know.
It was a terrible bill, wasn't it, Mr. Chair?
Here, we have two more.
Didn't you tell me that's what he wanted?
I thought he did. I didn't think he liked that amendment from the school board.
That was the thing that triggered it, right?
Yeah,
there.
Yeah, it was this. Well...
We have just heard House Bill 2045, and we're in the work session now. Is there a motion?
Chair, I'll move House Bill 2045 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. And do we need a letter to the President's office requesting that he rescind the referral to Ways and Means?
Senator Smith moves House Bill 2045 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? And with the understanding, we'll have a letter sent to the President's office removing the referral to Ways and Means.
Hasn't it already been there?
Uh-huh. No.
Yes.
Yeah, it's already been there, and their bill, their budget's not.
Okay. Can you call the roll, please?
Senator Bunn?
Aye.
Senator Cease?
Aye.
Senator Grinsky?
Aye.
Senator Kitzhaber? Senator Smith?
Aye.
Senator Springer? Mr. Chair?
Aye. Motion carried. Who would like to carry this bill?
I'll hold this down, and I'll carry it. Oh, okay.
Okay. Senator Smith will carry the bill. House Bill 2484?
Scott Bartlett,
please.
Mr. Chairman, would it be okay if the State Department of Higher Education, Roger Bassett, came up too, or would you like to speak?
I'll come up.
Can't wait.
It's always a pleasure to see Roger. I'll relate a story to you. I remember one time in the House, higher ed had a budget before our committee. One person came up to the podium there, whatever, and spoke, and we passed the bill out. The whole back row, there was 12 people that moved out. So you were well represented, or at least you were represented. Okay, let's hear the bill.
Mr. Chairman, and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Scott Bartlett. I'm legislative assistant to Representative Dwyer, who is the chief sponsor of this piece of legislation. And to be brief and to the point, the bill had four hearings in the state Federal Affairs Committee of Federal Affairs. And four hearings indicated a significant problem, we thought, that needed to be addressed, and that is that there wasn't ample statutory language to deal with conflict of interest and potential conflict of interest situations within the state Board of Higher Education, particularly on the various campuses. Not that it was an endemic problem, but it was serious enough. Last session, there was a legislative accommodation to allow for high-tech and other transfer to happen. The problem is that, as people came and testified, there is no clear language that governs what people should do when they have potential conflict of interest situations. There were numerous instances cited, people conducting private business and using public resources to do that, possibly not by any evil design, but by this gray area. This bill will do several things. One, it establishes that activity that the state board allows in terms of outside income must comply and comport with the mission of the higher ed system and in the institution. And it establishes that rules that are established by the board for okaying private activity have to be open to public disclosure. And it also has presidents and vice presidents of the various institutions do what you do, and that is file annual statement of interest disclosures with the Ethics Commission. This bill had, after a lot of negotiation, the support of the state system. It is a good bill. It's not a major bill, but it is in the ethical area a step forward, and we would ask you to support it.
Okay, Roger.
Chairman Otto, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Roger Bassett, the Director of Government Relations for the State System of Higher Education. At stake here is the public service role of the faculty and staff of our institutions, something we feel very strongly about. It makes good sense that that role be exercised within the constraints of the state ethics laws. We have worked with the State and Federal Affairs Committee and Mr. Bartlett and Representative Dwyer to deal with that issue in statutory form. We are also dealing with it on the campuses and within the state system staff in rule form. It is our intent to proceed with the kind of changes that are represented here, whether or not the bill passes. But the bill is acceptable to us, and my reason for being here is to be sure you know that.
Any questions? Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Any further comments from people in the audience?
Good afternoon. My name is Wendy Van Elverdeen, and I'm here today representing Oregon Public Employees Union, especially our members who do work at the higher education institutions, and they do support this bill, and we would urge your support of it. Thank you.
Questions? Anyone else? Close the hearing on the bill. Have you accept the motion?
I would move House Bill 2484 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Cease moves House Bill 2484 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Comments?
Yes, we're coming up to House Bill 34.
Call the roll, please. Yes.
And Senator Curran wanted to testify on that bill.
Oh.
Senator Bunn?
Aye.
Senator Cease?
Aye.
Senator Grinsky?
Aye.
Senator Kitzhaber?
Aye.
Senator Smith?
Aye.
Senator Springer? Mr. Chair?
Aye. Motion carried.
I'll carry.
Okay. Go to House Bill.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm going to go on.
3498. Anyone here to testify?
Yes. Okay.
Bill and Terry Smith.
Okay. Yeah. Bill?
Mr. Chairman, committee members, I am Philip Fell from the League of Oregon Cities. The League encourages your support for House Bill 3498. It's a bill that makes one change in statute and clarifies an additional section of the statute. Under current law, the effective date of an annexation can be delayed for up to 1 year only. What House Bill 3498 does is extend that period to up to 10 years. The clarification is that language in sections 2 and sections 4 of the bill make it clear that a consent